I invite you to open your copy of the Bible to the book of Luke, please. Luke chapter 23. I really invite you, if you don't have your own copy with you, grab one of the Bibles in the seat in front of you so you can follow along. We're going to be on page 884 today. Page 884. So we've already had one witness bear witness to what he saw helping Jesus carry the cross. But I want to talk about another witness this morning for just a few more minutes. Our first witness that I'm going to talk about today was with Jesus as he dragged his cross through the streets of Jerusalem. He was with Jesus as he limped up the hill that was called the Hill of the Skull or Calvary. And he was witnessing Jesus as he was nailed to the cross and then lifted up for everyone to see. He was there with Jesus through every second of his suffering from the time he was attached to the cross until he died. Now, many people witnessed those events. These were public events. This was a public execution. Everybody who wanted to could watch that. But this guy's vantage point was pretty unique because he watched all of this from the next cross over. Our first witness, that's right. Yes, I know. The problems with this, he's a convicted criminal. He was sentenced to die on the exact same day as Jesus. Now, the good news for us as far as evaluating his testimony is that he has absolutely nothing to lose and he has nothing to gain from telling lies to us. No matter what happened to him, no matter who Jesus was, no matter whether or not Jesus was telling the truth, this guy is going to die today. There's no way out for him. There's no escape. There's no bargaining for his life. He doesn't trade his testimony for an escape from his own cross. No, he's going to just tell it to us the way he sees it as a man who has only hours still to live. So I want to enter into his story, and I want us to see what he saw and hear what he heard. And we're going to start reading in verse 25 of Luke 23 to see what he saw and hear what he heard. Verse 25 says this. He, that's Pilate, by the way, the governor, the Roman governor, he released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for whom they asked, but he delivered Jesus over to their will, the people's will. And as they led him away, they seized one Simon of Cyrene. You've heard his testimony already this morning, who was coming in from the country, and they laid him on the cross to carry it behind Jesus. And there followed him a great multitude of the people and of women who were mourning and lamenting for him. But turning to them, Jesus said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, don't weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do these things when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Two others who were criminals were led away to be put to death with Jesus. And when they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on his right side and one on his left. And Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And they cast lots to divide his garments. And the people stood by watching, but the rulers scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, his chosen one." The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, "If you're the king of the Jews, then save yourself." There was also an inscription over him that said, "This is the king of the Jews." So what did he see? What did he observe? What did he hear? He saw that the crowd wanted Jesus dead. And he saw Pilate sign off on it and deliver him over to them. He saw Jesus carrying his own cross until a man named Simon helped him and helped him carry that cross all the way to the place of the skull. He followed behind with his other criminal friend dragging his own cross. And Jesus was crucified in between them. So one's on his right and one's on his left. Amazing part of the story, he's up there on the cross and he hears Jesus pray to God. But instead of doing what many martyrs might have done in that situation and pray for the judgment of God upon the evildoers that are killing them unfairly, he instead hears Jesus pray a very different prayer, doesn't he? The prayer Jesus prayed was this: Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Jesus didn't have any room in his heart for anger or wrath or bitterness or judgment on that day. In that moment, all he could think about as he's hanging on that cross is he's thinking about the condition of the people who would do this to him. And I think that made an impact on this criminal. But then he also heard and saw the rulers and the soldiers mocking him. And what they were especially mocking him about was a claim that Jesus had made during his lifetime. And that claim was that he was the chosen king that God had sent to rule over his people. And the mockery went something like this: okay, if you're the king of Israel, why don't you show us your power? Why don't you set yourself free? Why don't you go and do the things you promised you were going to do? And the implication of their mockery is Jesus is either a liar or a madman. He was delusional. He thought he was something, but he really wasn't. You're no king, Jesus. That's laughable. This isn't what happens to kings. Kings don't get nailed to crosses and bleed to death. The only evidence that I need to come to the conclusion that Jesus is not who he claimed to be to these people is the fact that he's hanging on that cross, doomed to die, just like the losers on the one hand and the loser on the right hand. I mean, think about it. God wouldn't let that happen to one of his chosen ones, would he? He wouldn't let that happen to his king. Now, would he? Didn't he have plans for this king to do great things? How could he let his king die? Therefore, the conclusion must be he's not who he claimed to be. I mean, think about it. Jesus wasn't defending himself. He wasn't up there on the cross screaming threats to anybody. When I come back, I'm going to set this straight. His followers that had been following him by the thousands, they've all evaporated and vanished into the woodwork. They're gone. They're not taking up arms to set him free. There's no Robin Hood kind of rescue, you know, at the last minute here. He's been abandoned to die. And there's no divine intervention either. There's no lightning falling from heaven on the people that are stringing Jesus up. In fact, it probably looks to everybody out there that God is just letting Jesus die because Jesus must be getting what he deserves, right? In fact, it's really interesting, one of the two criminals came to that very conclusion. Take a look at verse 39. Verse 39 says this: one of the criminals who were hanged railed at him. That means screamed at him, yelled at him, attacked him, right? They railed at him saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." Now, who could blame him for coming to that conclusion? He bought into the narrative, the story that the people in power were saying about Jesus, and I don't blame him for that. It just looks like it makes sense. It's just what you would expect. Except for this other witness. The criminal over here, hanging on the cross and dying, he sees it totally differently. And he now is going to share his testimony with us of what he thinks is going on here. And let's look at his words and see if we can understand his testimony. And again, you're going to have to decide if you find his testimony convincing or not. I can't make that decision for you. I'm just going to present his testimony and let you wrestle with it. Verse 40, look at this. But the other criminal, rebuked the first criminal saying, "Do you not fear God, since you're under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we're receiving the due reward of our deeds. This man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." If you're following along in your notes, I've got a few ideas or points I want to share with you that I think summarize the testimony of this eyewitness of Jesus' death. Here's the first summary piece. The first piece of his testimony is this: God is on Jesus' side. Do you notice what he says? The one guy is making fun of Jesus, and he's like, "Aren't you afraid of God, since you're about to meet God in a few hours?" What is he saying there? He's saying God is on Jesus' side. You don't want to pick on God's guy. You don't want to insult him and then stand in front of God and have to answer for it. I have four sons. I can tell you this, if any of you, and I love you all, if any of you come after any of my boys and then come to me thinking that we're going to be cool, you've got another thought coming. I'm not going to be okay with that. How you treat my son is going to very much determine how we have a relationship. And the same thing is true about God. And this other criminal understands this. He's like, don't you dare to mock and insult and attack the Son of God? Are you kidding me? He's hanging on the cross. And despite all evidence to the contrary, he actually believes that God is on Jesus' side. That this is a horrible mistake. That this is not what it looks like it's supposed to be. This is not. There's more than meets the eye right here. There's something happening that's not right. Because God hasn't abandoned Jesus. God is on Jesus' side. Secondly, and this is the one that's the most obvious, right, from verse 41. Verse 41 says this, and we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong. Second piece of testimony from this guy is this, Jesus is innocent, we are guilty. Jesus is innocent, we're guilty. Now, for them, it's pretty obvious, right? They've been nailed to their own crosses. They're about to die for what they've done. He's like, look, I get it. I am here because I deserve to be here. I've committed crimes against the state. I deserve to be up here. But this guy in the middle, this guy that I'm watching, forgive his enemies instead of call down judgment upon them. That guy, nothing wrong with him. I guarantee you, whatever they say he did, he didn't do. He's innocent. I wish I knew some of the behind the story scene stuff here. I would love to know if this criminal had ever heard Jesus teach during the days before this. I would love to know if maybe he had watched from the edges of the crowd as Jesus talks about things and explains God. And he's like, there's no way. He had become convinced that Jesus was innocent. And then the flip side of that is he looked at himself and he realized, you know what? I'm guilty. I'm the one that deserves to be up here. And I wonder, I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you're a pretty good basketball player and then you play with somebody who's like really good and then you start to look at yourself and you go, you know, maybe I'm not as good as I originally had thought. He was in the presence of true goodness. I guarantee you, as he's on that cross, he's not worried about the spiritual condition of the people who nailed him to that cross. He's probably wanting punishment for them. He's probably thinking vengeful thoughts. If he has any room in his brain for thoughts, with all the pain he's in, and he hears Jesus want his attackers, his killers, his murderers to be forgiven, oh, there's nothing wrong with Jesus. He knew Jesus was good. He knew Jesus was unfairly being attacked. And he saw himself in relationship to Jesus, and he's like, there's no comparison. I'm the guilty one. He's the innocent one. Third piece of testimony. And this is the crazy one, okay? Not that these aren't all a little bit crazy in light of the evidence that's in front of this guy, but this is the one that blows my mind the most remarkable piece of testimony that I don't totally get. He believes this. This is the third piece of testimony. You're going to write it down. Jesus is going to win. Now, why in the world? How do I come to that conclusion? Take a look at verse 42. And he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your... He thinks somehow Jesus is still going to win this thing. Jesus is hanging, bleeding out, suffocating in his own internal blood. He is dying. How in the world can he still be the king? Yeah, he claimed to be the king, but everybody who's watching is like, well, that was a great idea, but that's come to an end. Somehow this criminal looks at the same thing everybody else is looking at, and he says, you know what's going to happen? I don't know how it's going to happen, but somehow Jesus is going to come into his kingdom. It's going to still happen. Now, can you imagine a more unlikely thing happening than that? I am a devoted fan, as all of you know and mock me about, it's fine. I'm a devoted fan of a team called the New England Patriots. And I'll be honest with you, I love them more than their mothers do, okay? Well, no, that's probably not true. I love them a lot. But at halftime of two Super Bowls ago, when they're losing 21-3 to a team that is very gifted and a very good team, I was not at halftime going high five to my boys saying, boy, this is going to be great. I can't wait for the second half. I was more like, do I shut it off now so that I don't scar my children for life about what is about to happen to them? I didn't believe, and I loved them to pieces. I was watching some behind-the-scenes stuff. They actually have some of the players mic'd up during the game, and then later on they kind of share it. One of the wide receivers for the New England Patriots, he's a crazy, crazy lunatic named Julian Edelman. And he was talking to Tom Brady on the bench during halftime, and this is one of the things he says. Boy, this is going to be one heck of a story, isn't it, Tom? At halftime, losing 21-3. They would go on to be down 28-3. And they're still believing. The lunatic on the bench believed what I couldn't believe. This lunatic on the cross actually has the audacity to believe that Jesus, the person who's about to die in a cruel, inhumane way, is actually still going to win. He didn't doubt it for a moment. He had faith. In fact, he was so convinced he wanted in on it. He's like, I don't just want to see it happen. I want to be on your bench when it happens. I want to be a part of this. This guy is still convinced. I'm telling you, this is faith at its core. It's to look at all evidence to the contrary and say, you know what? Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to turn out so well. But I know the person involved, Jesus, he's not going to lose. He's going to win. I believe it. I have no evidence to support this crazy belief, but I believe it. Now, I don't know if he understood about the resurrection and all that. I don't know if he had any idea what was coming. All he knew is that he believed Jesus was going to win. Fourth statement of his testimony. And this is the part where it gets personal for us. He says, basically, Jesus, I want to be on your team. I want to be on your team. Remember what he said, verse 42. Remember me, he says, when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me. Remember that when everybody else bailed on you, I stood up for you. I spoke up for you. All your followers have abandoned you. It seems like God has abandoned you, but I'm telling you what, I am the only person to speak up in your defense. I'm the only one to say that. He's basically calling out from his cross, I'm with him. I'm with him. He's my guy. And yeah, I'm going to die, and yeah, he's going to die, but he's going to win. And someday, Jesus, please, don't forget that when you were all alone, when you had nobody else sticking up for you and everybody else was mocking you, I believed in you. I stood up for you. I was the only voice that was speaking on your behalf. I was with you when nobody else was. That's his testimony. He wants that. But this is when the cynical part of Toby Locke comes to the surface as I'm reading this story. Because isn't that kind of convenient? Isn't that a little bit of that example, that phrase on the screen behind you? It's a little too little, too late. Think about this. Does this guy have any right to expect Jesus to do anything for him? Assuming he's right about Jesus, that Jesus is going to win and he's going to be the king and he's going to have all that stuff. Does he have any right to ask Jesus to remember him? Think about what he brings to the table. Here's what the criminal brings to the table. I spent a lifetime breaking laws and hurting people. We don't know if he was a violent criminal or if he was a robber or what he was, but either way, his crimes hurt other people. He spent his lifetime living the opposite of what God expects from people, and here he is at the last minute on the cross, changing stories, flipping sides here at the end. I'm sorry, man. If you really believed all this stuff that you're saying you believe now, why didn't it show up when you were in your 20s? Why didn't it show up when you were a teenager? Why weren't you defending me before? Why are you waiting till now when it's too late to do anything about it? I know you. You're just grasping for straws. You're just trying to avoid total destruction, and you're hoping, you're pinning all your hopes on me. If I'm Jesus, I turn to this criminal and say, buddy, I don't need you. I'm fine. I am going to win, by the way. But I don't need you. I'm sorry, buddy. That's nice and all, but that's not good enough. You want to come to me, you better come with a lifetime built up of all these good things you can offer me. Because right now, buddy, what you had your chance to live your life. You made your choices, and those choices took you to your cross. And now that you're on that cross, buddy, I'm sorry, man. It's too late. It's too late in the game. Not enough. I need more. Pause button, right? Have you ever felt that way? That what you had to offer God was a little too little, a little too late? Sure, you come to him and you feel sorry after you've committed the huge problem, after you've gotten your life into that big mess. That's when you feel bad and want to fix it. I wonder how many people, because I've talked to some of these people, I've been one of these people, who stay away from God because they're afraid that now that they've made a mess, that God is going to look at them and say, sorry, buddy, too little, too late. You made your bed, now you're going to have to just deal with it, right? Lie in it. If you feel like that, if you've ever felt like that in your life, if you've ever kept God at arm's length because you weren't sure that what you had to offer was enough to get God's attention or to win him over, you have got to see how Jesus responds to this guy. Because how Jesus responds to this guy will tell you, I think, how he will respond to you if you have the courage and you have the ridiculous faith to come to him in your brokenness with nothing to offer him, hoping for his good mercy. How does Jesus respond to this guy? Take a look here at verse 43. One verse, and it's got the mystery of the ages hidden in one verse. Verse 43 says this, and he, Jesus, said to him, the other criminal, truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. Did you catch that? Today, you'll be with me in paradise. None of those things make any sense. Do they? Any sense at all? Why would this guy feel that he has a right to paradise? Simply because at the last minute, after he's already starting to pay the price for his own crimes, he feels bad and starts to change his tune. I'll tell you why. Because the person he's dealing with in the middle cross is good enough to bring about this response. And notice how he responds to this guy. Number one, he says to this criminal, I accept you. I accept you. Jesus doesn't ignore him. He doesn't shame him. He doesn't sneer at him out of the corner of his mouth. He assures this criminal, guess what, buddy? You're going to join me in paradise today. You're not going to have to burn it off in some midway place for a few years until you're good enough to get with the real saints. You get into paradise right now, right here, based on what you just said. Why? Why in the world, Jesus, would you say it? Why would you accept this guy? I'll tell you why. Because of the ridiculous faith that this man displayed on that cross. And faith, my friends, this is something we got to understand. It's faith, not morality, that satisfies the requirements of God when it comes to humans. It's faith, not morality, that satisfies his requirements or doesn't. Because there's lots of examples in the Bible of people who had high moral character who were not able to satisfy the requirements of God. They didn't make it. They didn't make the cut. Why? Because they were missing the one thing that God does require of humans in order to have restored relationship, and that's trust. It's faith. It's I believe in spite of all the evidence that you really are that good. And this guy on the cross had nothing to offer Jesus by way of morality, but he had a lot to offer to Jesus when it comes to faith, doesn't he? He believed against all evidence to the contrary that Jesus was going to win, and he didn't mind letting everybody else know about it. He had the faith that God is looking for. And so as soon as Jesus sees that faith, he's like, absolutely. Absolutely, I accept you. Because the only thing keeping God from accepting you today has nothing to do with your morality. It has everything to do with whether or not you're willing to trust him or not. That's what matters, and nothing else. So if you start trusting God in your 20s or in your teens or in your single digits, that's all the better. Because you get to enjoy Jesus for a lifetime. But if you wait until 88 years old and you're wheezing your last few breaths and you express that faith, Jesus says to you, just like he does to the 5-year-old kid with his whole life ahead of him, I accept you. It's faith I'm after. Without faith, Hebrews tells us, it is what? You remember? Impossible to please God. But the flip side is just as true. With faith, it is always possible to please God. We got this so twisted up, so mixed up. We think we got to come to God and perform and get his attention by our good deeds. And what he says is, no, 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 no. That's not it. Do you trust me or not? What if the amazing story of Easter is that God's posture towards us losers is always open? Like, what if he's always open? What if he's never doing this to us? What if we're the ones doing this to him? And what if you finally drop your posture of unbelief and say, Jesus, I have no right to ask you for anything, but please, Jesus, please, Jesus. If you have that posture, what if he is always, always willing to run into you, to you and embrace you and take you into his family? What if that's the case? Wouldn't that be good news? Wouldn't that be good news that you could hold on to in the middle of boring, awful, mundane life? That you could hold on to during the trials and the suffering and the pain? I accept you. Second thing that he says to this guy, and I love this, we'll talk more about this next week. This is not the end. This is not the end. We've trained ourselves to believe that death is the end. And so we fear it more than anything else because we don't want our lives, we don't want us to end. And what Jesus says to this guy very clearly is, yes, a phase in your life is about to come to an end, but there is more beyond this phase. This is not the end of your story. There is something out there called paradise, and guess what, buddy? Today, you're going to join me there. Your life will go on. Death never, ever, ever gets the final word. God has determined that life will win. There's something that's beyond this life. That's why we can't just live for right now. That's why we can't live, like I talked about last week, for your satisfaction of your needs right now. You've got to live for something bigger. You've got to prepare for what is coming. You've got to look ahead beyond right now and ask what's coming. And I better be ready for that. Because this is not all there is. This life is not the end. Death is not the end. Third thing Jesus says, and with this we're almost done. Jesus says, it's never too late to cry out for my help. It's never too late. This guy has hours to live. I want to ask you this question. What good deeds can he do in the next 3 hours to make himself acceptable to God? If that's the way to get it done, what options does he have? Who can he serve? How can he help the old lady across the street? How can he help the homeless? How can he feed the hungry? He's dying. He can't get down. He has nothing to offer God. But here's the beautiful story of the good news. The good news says that while there's life, there's hope. While there's life, there's hope. He says, buddy, you're going to be with me. I know this is the end. I know this is like the last few minutes of your life. I know you can't earn anything from me. You just have expressed your faith. But guess what? You get to be with me anyway. I'm sure that Jesus had more breath and more time, he would have said something like this to the guy. I sure wish you had called sooner. Really wish we could have avoided you climbing up on this cross. Wish we could have avoided the crimes that led you here. God's not saying it doesn't matter what you do. What he's saying is, what you've done doesn't stop me from showing you my mercy if you express faith in me. I wish you had called sooner, buddy. But you're here, and because you're here, I'm going to accept you. I bet you Jesus would look at this guy and say, have you wasted time? Yeah. Have you wasted opportunities to know me and serve me and love me? Absolutely. But it doesn't matter if it's your last moment in life. If you are willing to express faith in Jesus Christ, he is willing to accept you. Friends, this is where I get very personal. Don't let your shame keep you from letting God embrace you. Don't do it. Don't allow your regrets over what you've done keep you from looking at God and saying, God, I want in. He doesn't allow us to do that. He invites us to come to him. If it's at the beginning of your life, the middle, or the end, he'll take you if you express the faith in him that you need to have, that he is looking for, that is the only requirement he expects from us. It's never too late. Never too late to cry out for help. He is as eager to rescue us at the end as he ever was to rescue us when we were young, with our whole lives ahead of us, with all the mistakes yet to be made. So, you've heard his testimony. Just a criminal, but he saw some stuff. He heard some stuff. He experienced some stuff. And the writer, Luke, wants to write it down so that 2,000 plus years later, you could know what he had to say. So my question for you is, what are you going to do with his testimony? Are you just going to file it away under interesting religious facts in the file folders of your mind? Or are you going to realize that this is a personal request that God is daring you to do what that criminal had the courage to do? He's daring you to believe that it's not too late for you, that Jesus can rescue you, that there's room for you on his team and in his family if you cry out to him like this sad, pathetic, wasted life criminal had the courage to do. Friends, the best way to enjoy Easter is to have the courage to trust God. And when he comes running for you, you don't push him away. You run into his arms and you let him take you. You let him forgive you. And you just celebrate the goodness of this God who you don't deserve. I encourage you, friends, do it today. 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 Don't wait. Don't wait till you're 85 and on your deathbed, because who knows how you're going to meet death. What if death comes to meet you more quickly than you expect and you don't have time to do what he did? I'm not saying something crazy is going to happen to you, but I'm warning you, we don't know how our lives come to an end. Don't play games. If you hear the message today, respond today. Have the time ahead of you to make your life about something that matters. Don't try to live your life for you and your little kingdom so that someday you can hand over the keys to Jesus when you're 85. It doesn't work that way. It's dangerous to do that, because when you've held on to something your whole life long, it's really hard to let go at 85. So let go today. Cry out to him today. It's not too little too late. Let's pray. God, I'm grateful for the eyewitnesses to an event that I know is so crucial that if it didn't happen the way the Bible says it happened, Lord, then I have nothing. There's no reason why people should come listen to me talk if these things didn't actually happen. And we've heard eyewitness testimony today, Lord, from two men, Simon and from this criminal whose name we do not know. But we know, Lord, one day we will know his name. If we've embraced you the way he did, we'll know his name. Why? Because we're going to go to paradise to join him. And we're going to have conversations. We're going to find out all the behind-the-scenes stuff that I really wish I knew now. Because, God, you are this crazy, reckless, loving God. And you just welcome people who express faith in you. You just do. We don't deserve it. We've never deserved it. We never will deserve it, no matter what we do. But you embrace us, and you say, I accept you. I love you. And I need to stop talking now, but God, just thank you for being who you are. You could have been so different, and you aren't. You could have been more like us and petty and judgmental and eager to destroy like we are, and yet you're so different. You're eager to welcome, to forgive, to cleanse, to dust off, and to push off into a new life. That's what you're eager to do. Thank you, God. If there's anybody here, Father, that hasn't made that decision yet, they haven't crossed that line yet, they haven't taken that risk yet, empower them, God, drag on their hearts until they respond to you so they can experience this life before it is too late. And I ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.